Good morning. Iran tells President Trump its price for reopening the Strait of Hormuz. The Wall Street Journal explains where things stand.
At this point in time, both sides have kind of gone back to their corners of the boxing ring and are assessing each other, like, how injured are they? How much are they willing to fight here?
How consumer fears of catching the Cyclospora parasite are hitting America's farms. And what to know about this week's rainbow-colored meteor shower. It's Monday, August 10th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shemita Basu. This is Apple News Today. Iranian officials laid out demands for reopening the Strait of Hormuz over the weekend, calling for the U.S. to promise never to threaten Iran again, deliver compensation for war damage, and unconditionally release its frozen assets. It said it wouldn't discuss reopening the strait until the U.S., quote, corrects its behavior. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said the country was close to a deal with Oman to carve out potential shipping lanes in the waterway.
I can say we are in the final stages, and the old existing routes will be replaced with new ones. Specialists are currently working on the maps. Of course, this does not mean the opening of the Strait of Hormuz. This agreement may take place, but the opening of the Strait of Hormuz is contingent upon the fulfillment of a set of other conditions.
President Trump seemed prepared to wait, telling Axios the U.S. was only, quote, low-keying and semi-negotiating with Iran, thinking that economic pressures on the country would eventually take their toll. His tone stands in sharp contrast to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who last week said a deal on the strait could be days away. And on Saturday, Vice President Vance suggested there was still a way to go before the conflict would come to an end.
This thing is not over. It's obviously not at the beginning. We're in the middle of the game, and we're applying a whole host of tools, diplomatic, economic, military tools, to ensure that we get the best outcome for the American people. I feel quite confident we will get there, but we're still a bit in the middle of the game.
Alex Ward is the Wall Street Journal's national security reporter. He told us that Iran's push for war reparations was the only new demand from the ill-fated ceasefire deal that was agreed upon back in June.
So in some ways, we're back to kind of the MOU. The Iranians are basically saying, hey, America, why don't we go back to that agreement that we made before? But there's still a bunch of issues here, including sequencing, right? Who moves first? The way the Iranians are asking for it almost seems like they're asking for it up front. That's obviously a no-go.
Some analysts say Iran wants the guarantees before committing to anything because they fear that Trump could walk away from the conflict once the waterway is secured. And the last deal fell apart after Iranians tried to reassert their control, firing on commercial tankers passing through the strait. Fighting has calmed, but it remains volatile, and the strait is still a dangerous place for commercial vessels. Any new deal would need to address who really controls the waterway.
So this would require probably a lot more intense negotiations than Trump wants, because in Trump's mind, this could all be done, you know, in 24 hours. But if we recall from the Obama years, it took basically 2.5 years just to get that nuclear deal.
And in some ways, Ward says their current positioning makes it an even more complicated negotiation. Trump wants to wholly dismantle Iran's nuclear program, and Iran wants full control of a shipping route that much of the world depends on.
Neither side is going to get that. So where are they going to compromise? Well, right now we've got a bit of a timeline issue. The Iranians at this point assess that their threshold for pain is far higher than Trump's. And they have good reason to think that, because Trump has blinked a lot of times, right? Threatening to go big, and then he hasn't. And he's got the political calendar, and his time is up in 2.5 years. Now, the U.S. vision of this is like, look, there are pretty strong sanctions on Iran. Their economy is tanking. Their inflation numbers are very high. There's sort of a leadership crisis within the country. Maybe Iran breaks before the U.S. breaks.
The rest of the world, meanwhile, continues to watch and wait for a breakthrough, as the status quo threatens to push up prices the longer it stays closed and draw down important global reserves.
A bunch of other presidents were deterred from doing something like this because they were worried the theory that Iran could close the strait would be proven true. It has now been proven true. I mean, it is possible you start to see traffic approximate what it was before the war. It could even get back to where it was. But in many ways, we will all know now that the Strait of Hormuz can be, quote unquote, closed. The Iranians, if the regime is still in place, can go after those vessels. The sort of psychology of the Strait of Hormuz is forever changed.
The parasite linked to certain salad greens has wreaked havoc on thousands of American stomachs this summer. But cyclosporiasis has also impacted our collective psyche, and made many shoppers wary of buying any kind of lettuce. Foot traffic is down at salad restaurants like Chopped and Sweetgreen, and it's impacting farmers like Larry Cox, who owns a produce supplier in California's Salinas Valley.
They have seen a decrease in orders from restaurants and grocery stores that are usually dependable customers for them.
Amira McKee is with the Wall Street Journal. She said that lettuce has a short shelf life, and when demand drops, it leads to tough decisions.
So the choice he and farmers across the region are making is to destroy their crops. And so that means that Cox has decided to plow over, to chop up and grind back into the earth 300,000 pounds of harvest-ready romaine hearts each week.
The vast majority of lettuce that Americans consume is grown domestically, and there's no indication from federal health officials that any parts of the outbreak can be linked to lettuce grown here. The CDC has zeroed in on shredded iceberg lettuce from Taylor Farms in central Mexico as the source for the outbreak in about 15 states.
There is no evidence to that effect to suggest that Americans should be staying away from lettuce altogether. And speaking to sort of industry leaders and such, this is not unusual. Oftentimes, when there's an outbreak, Americans sort of stay away from produce at large because it erodes some trust in how safe the food supply is.
Fresh lettuce and prepackaged lettuce took a sales hit in July as news of the virus emerged. And salad companies like Sweetgreen have said they expect their yearly sales to stay down relative to last year. Demand typically does recover within months of a food safety scare. And some chains like Taco Bell have reported a rebound since their initial drops. But one expert told the Journal that a previous E. coli outbreak in spinach in 2006 dampened sales for years.
Consumers tend to have a difficult time distinguishing between different ways that a produce is grown, different places that they originate, or even different varieties of leafy greens. And so the impact of this has really been pretty indiscriminate across the leafy greens industry.
In recent days, health officials in Michigan, the hardest hit state, said that new case reports were slowing down and that residents no longer needed to avoid all bagged salads. On Friday, officials in Puerto Rico instituted extreme water rationing rules in parts of the capital San Juan and its surrounding areas. Water is being completely shut off for 48 hours at a time on a rotating basis between two designated zones, meaning residents will have to make tough decisions like whether to shower or flush toilets. The island is no stranger to water shortages, but an ongoing drought has pushed Puerto Rico to the brink. July was the driest month on record for San Juan in the last 120 years. The ongoing El Niño climate phenomenon is also intensifying these conditions, and forecasters say there's little relief expected. Stella Canino Quiñones is a reporter for The Washington Post. She says that many of Puerto Rico's challenges today can be traced back to events over the last decade.
Puerto Rico had one of the most devastating hurricanes, Hurricane Maria in 2017. Earthquakes in 2020, and those things have caused vulnerabilities already with aging infrastructure.
But problems have been exacerbated, she says, by failing to prepare.
Puerto Rico's water utility company has admitted that they have deferred maintenance and have not done their due diligence of making sure the systems are in place, that everything is running smoothly, and that the infrastructure is being replaced.
That utility, the Puerto Rico Aqueduct and Sewer Authority, known as PRASA, also reported a number of major ruptures on key pipelines in June. Those incidents resulted in more than 120,000 customers experiencing water disruptions and major issues with water pressure. Canino Quiñones reports that political factions are also pointing fingers at each other. The head of the government-owned water company fired San Juan's regional director last year, saying that lingering maintenance issues had been ignored for too long. Others said that removing him deprived the company of key institutional knowledge.
The water utility company, think of it as like a 1950s Cadillac. This is a very old car that only a few specific people know kind of like the tricks to kind of have it to turn on and work and run. And now you take the people out that know how to drive that Cadillac. Now it's not functioning or there's new problems arising.
Meanwhile, Puerto Ricans are left to fend for themselves. Canino Quiñones told us that many residents she spoke to are resigned to the fact that neither the government nor the utility company is going to meet their needs. And that's led some residents to build their own infrastructure, like attempting to reopen wells that were dug in the 1600s. Either way, there's no easy way out of the crisis.
This is kind of like a pressure cooker. Things that should have been fixed, should have been replaced, were not. And now the average person has to figure it out and find ways to both keep your school open, keep your business open, still try to have a normal life. But there is no immediate resolution to this.
Congress has two bills under consideration in the House that could help. One would direct the Army Corps of Engineers to assess Puerto Rico's water infrastructure needs. And another would more than double the federal funding cap on infrastructure upgrades there. Neither bill has advanced to a full vote. Here are a few other stories we're following today. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected the terms of President Trump's announced peace plan for Gaza, saying that his country's forces would not leave until Hamas is disarmed. It comes just a little more than a week after Trump announced that his Board of Peace had reached a deal that would entail Hamas fully giving up its weapons in a phased process. Hailed as a breakthrough by the president, it ran into trouble almost immediately, as disagreements emerged over whether Hamas or Israel would offer their concessions first. Netanyahu faces what could be a challenging election in October, and anything that appears like giving in to demands in Gaza could be politically costly. Over the course of about 10 days, a team of doctors and nurses performed over 1,000 cataract surgeries on patients in one of the world's most dangerous conflict zones, between Sudan and South Sudan. NBC News has the story of how this team, led by Dr. Lloyd Williams, an eye surgeon from Duke University, got to the Abyei region for their work. He spoke to NBC about performing an operation on a 15-year-old girl.
You have this kid laying on a table in front of you, and you're looking down into their eyes that are completely white. And you think to yourself, if I do a good job, this person's going to be able to see for the rest of their life.
The following day, the young girl was able to recognize her father immediately. South Sudan has one of the highest rates of blindness in the world, according to the World Health Organization. And in the Abyei region specifically, most people have never visited an eye doctor. The UN says that healthcare in the region is typically severely limited, and Williams and his team arranged the trip with private funding. And finally, this year's Perseid meteor showers are here, and they promise to be the most spectacular in many years. We tend to know when these are going to happen, as each year the Earth's orbit takes it through a trail of debris left by asteroids and comets. Those pieces collide with the Earth's atmosphere, and you see what looks like shooting stars. The Perseid showers are known to be very active, with the possibility of seeing 50 to 100 meteors per hour. And this year, they'll be especially impressive, because a new moon will create very dark skies. An astronomer told the AP that if you want to go check them out, go outside after dark, away from clouds and city light if you can. The shower's peak this year is expected Wednesday into Thursday morning. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Town and Country reports on what drives people to pose as students at the country's top universities. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.